Penguin Random House Audio presents Rage on Being Queer, Black, Brilliant, and Completely Over It. This is the author, Lester Fabian Brathwaite. For my mom, though were she here, I definitely urge her not to read this book. Chapter 1. Fucking White Boys. One of the first, if not the first, published bits of black gay prose. And for all intents and purposes, and for the remainder of this book, when I say gay, I mean almost exclusively gay cisgender male, was Richard Bruce Nugent's Smoke, Lilies, and Jade. One passage opens with the main character, Alex, searching in a field, on his hands and knees, until he finds at last two strong white legs, dancer's legs. The contours pleased him. His eyes wandered on past the muscular hocks to the firm white thighs, the rounded buttocks, then the lithe narrow waist, strong torso and broad deep chest, the heavy shoulders, the graceful muscled neck, square chin and quizzical lips, Grecian nose with its temperamental nostrils, the brown eyes looking at him, like Monty looked at Zora. His hair curly and black and all tousled, and it was beauty. This short story was published in 1926 in the first and only issue of the nevertheless highly influential Fire magazine, which was founded and filled by some of the greats of the Harlem Renaissance. Alongside poetry, plays, essays, and short stories by Langston Hughes, Captain Cullen, Zora Neale Hurston, and Wallace Thurman, Stat Nugent's gay-ass prose. Openly gay, openly ass. A lot of the Harlem Renaissance luminaries were queer in some way, but it was an aspect of their lives that was often obfuscated in their work and in their later biographies. Subtitled A Novel, Part 1, Smoke, Lilies, and Jade is, as a work of literature, Nugent wrote it when he was 20, and it reads like something I might have written in college. While some writers do amazing work at that age, I was not one of them, and neither was Nugent. No tea, no shade, no smoke, lilies, or jade. The story is all very stream of consciousness, with no proper sentences, just clauses separated by ellipses, the kind of novelistic experimentation that seemed to be all the rage back then, with the previous year's Mrs. Dalloway among the best examples. But Nugent didn't have the range to pull it off, not yet anyway. Still, Nugent does have a poetic lilt to his words that's appealing, and one wonders what the rest of this novel could have been had he finished it. And it's a good story. It would have gotten an A in college, and it made the single issue of Fire, where it fits in perfectly as part of that magazine's manifesto to give voice to the young, radical black creatives shaking the tree of American culture out of a few square blocks in New York. Therefore, as a work of transgressive art, Smoke, Lilies, and Jade is fucking astounding. The story's protagonist, Alex, a clear stand-in for Nugent, is a struggling artist, living with his mother, and chronically unemployed, though he also happens to be close consorts with people named Zora, Conte, and Langston. Alex is bisexual. But is she, though? He's ostensibly in a relationship with some poor girl named Melva, but he's completely obsessed with this white boy, Adrian, whom he calls Beauty. He claims to be in love with Melva, who, it seems, is also white, but he fixates on Beauty. An entire passage is dedicated to Alex and Beauty lying in bed together, the sleeping Beauty's hair tickling Alex's nose as he smokes beside him, all the while wanting to kiss his beautiful lips. Again, this is something I might have written in college, or in those wandering years after I had dropped out, when my desire gnawed at my insides, and the only reprieve was the fictions I constructed around beautiful white boys. Once I finally started getting it in, as the kids say, I was able to turn those fictions into reality and wrote those moments as memories in my head. I came to understand why so many gay writers delight in describing the nape of a man's neck, the softness of their hair, and the way it decorates a pillow, the soft, soft eyelashes veiling secret treasures of the world, the parted lips aching to be kissed, the skin always white, always white, always white. So much of gay literature fixates on white male beauty and its destruction. From Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray to James Baldwin's Giovanni's Room to the seminal gay novels of 1978 to Alan Hollinghurst's The Spartacus Affair. So much of anything intended for a gay audience fixates on and exalts white male beauty. Is it any wonder, then, that I have always fixated on and exalted white male beauty? When the things I sought to teach me how to be all taught the same thing, that white boys are beauty, white boys are desire. It all comes down to fucking white boys. I came to America in 1990 from Guyana, a tiny island nation off the coast of Africa. Just kidding, it's a mostly landlocked country in South America. But I had you going there for a minute. America blew my stupid four-year-old mind. Cable television? Are you fucking kidding me? Malls? Food that was fast and, I assumed, good for you? Otherwise, why would they make it so cheap and readily available? It's not like Guyana was the third world, when that was still a legitimate way to describe countries. After all, noted white American man Jim Jones seemed to like it enough. Too much, some might say. But it certainly wasn't the first world. I don't have any memories of it, really. But we didn't have HBO. America was so rich and white and big and loud, compared to the mostly black and brown, very poor, pretty small land of my birth. I hadn't quite figured out what being gay was, but I did have a tacit understanding that whatever it was, to quote the great Valerie Cherish, I'm it! And I should probably keep quiet about it. But I fell in love so easily with men. Men in magazines, on television, in film. They weren't all necessarily white men, but being that most of the men anywhere were white, they tended to be. My first loves were Saved by the Bell's Zach Morris and Blossom's Joy Russo. My mother loved her daytime soap operas, and so did I, because soaps had a reliable stream of shirtless hunks who were always just coming out of the shower, or just about to put on a shirt, or just lying around, suggestively naked, after making softly lit love to a woman. And then I started to fall in love with men in real life. In school, my first crushes were almost all white boys. There was Dick Capella, my tall, lithe, athletic bully, who was my main antagonist throughout middle and high school. But what can I say? I love a challenge. I was obsessed with every inch of him. He had this protruding Adam's apple I would catch myself ogling during our classes together. Jake would always make fun of me, but not in as cruel a way as some of the other kids. But he was persistent. He would make fun of my weight or my glasses, but I secretly appreciated his attention. God, that explains so much of my dating life. Jake loved coming up with nicknames for people, and because of his humor and force of personality, they often stuck, even if they initially seemed cruel. Our mutual friend Stefan became Buff because, Jake observed one day, his hair made him look like a buffalo. Dan became Sucio, Spanish for dirty, because Jake said Dan's house was dirty. Once he learned my middle name was Fabian, Jake started calling me Phoebes, like Lisa Kudrow's character on Friends. I got off pretty easy, though Jake took every opportunity he could get to roast me. Sometimes I'd fire back, but I learned the best way to deal with him was just to laugh along. If we were both laughing, then I was in on the joke, and maybe Jake would like me more. This was the same Jake about whom I wrote secret fan fiction and daydreamed. One day, I hoped, his animosity would turn to admiration. When Netflix's British dramedy Sex Education premiered in 2019, with his love story between the openly gay and black Eric Effiong, and his tall, lithe, athletic, and very white bully Adam Groff with his protruding Adam's apple, the sad 15-year-old faggot inside me that I will always be cried just a little, or a lot. When I first discovered Smoke, Lilies, and Jade, it came as both a relief. Oh, black boys have been pining after white boys for at least a century, and an indictment. Oh, black boys have been pining after white boys for at least a century. Nugent's love story was groundbreaking because it was queer and interracial, at a time when both were taboo and or illegal. There would be other gay stories and novels throughout the 20th century, but very few with a black protagonist, and very few that rapturously praised and exalted black male beauty. Sure, there were copious references to big black dicks scattered among the gay literary canon, but where was the rhapsodic, poetic appreciation
Sample complete. Ready to continue?